Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Stu does America.
Are you watching the show free at youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica? Well, you can please do that. We'd really appreciate it. Subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. We also want you to go a little bit farther with us, if you would. Of course, Blaze TV is where you get more great conservative content than you could ever hope for or possibly consume. It's a buffet of conservatism at StuDoesAmerica.com. Use the code STU to check out. And you'll get $20 off your subscription. So check that out. Carol Roth is going to join us to help us kind of make fun of the Democrats for potentially setting themselves up for a financial audit, which we like to see. We will take a look at some new polling on the left on how opposition to President Trump's agenda is going. Spoiler, not so great. Not so great. But we're going to start by doing Super Bowl 59. Yes, one of the two greatest football games ever played. We're talking about a Philadelphia Eagles victory, America's team, there for you, America, to take out the evil empire of the Kansas City Chiefs in easy fashion, in dominating fashion, in destructive fashion. The Eagles win 40-22. Here's a picture that I never thought I'd see in my entire life. Certainly not twice in my entire life. Yes, the Eagles holding up the Lombardi Trophy. Absolutely beautiful. Mwah. Chef's kiss. Am I going to be an annoying Eagles fan today? Yeah, you're going to have to deal with that a little bit. I'm so sorry about that. If you happen to be a Chiefs fan, we still love you. I mean, you know, there's a lot to like about the Chiefs, but not anymore. I can't deal with it. I need a little break. Eagles coming in, taking that banner, really excited about it. And man, it was a really incredible weekend. And by the way, for a lot of people who said the NFL was dead, and I always get, every time I talk about the NFL, I get, well, why are you watching that? Because Colin Kaepernick took a knee 46 years ago, and that was bad. Look, I don't know, maybe the American people moved on. Didn't seem like they ever really left. 126 million U.S. viewers projects Fox. That is an all-time record. And you have to think, too, there's a couple asterisks to that. Number one, as much as I loved it, not really a good game, frankly. It was 34-0 at one point. So it wasn't one that kept the nation's attention for all four quarters. So that number is kind of surprising that it would be the most watched of all time. The other part of this is it's partially to do with the way they measure it. They expanded and basically expanded out of state viewing a little bit, how they measure that. So, it's possible it wasn't actually number one. It could have been number two or number three. But at the end of the day, pretty good number and very heavily watched. Being there for the Super Bowl is an experience I will always cherish. That was my 20th Super Bowl. 20th. So I'm at like a third of all of them now. And that's been a really, really fun life experience. And the third one I got to go see with my son, Zach. I've had a friend, Chris. I've been to 19 of them with. So it's been a great pleasure. Really just the coolest thing in the world. And I will say there was some interesting stuff that went on there that you don't necessarily get to experience, through the news coverage. First of all, the security was freaking serious. And I don't know how much they covered that. More security than I've ever seen in my entire life. Insane security measures. If you see here, this is at the actual game. And you notice that it says police. And then under it says Secret Service, providing a lot of the security for the event. And I don't know if that was because of the terrorist attack a few weeks ago, that they just beefed up the security, or if it was that Donald Trump was at the game, so that probably beefed it up, or maybe a combination of both, because it wasn't just Secret Service. It was a really increased presence everywhere in the city. I mean, it really felt like everywhere you looked was another police officer. Of course, I like that. I'd rather have a safe environment, frankly, for an event like that, especially with my son there. So that was good. I was thankful to the police who were able to secure the event. But I will say the travel in and out was worse than any of the 20 that I've been to. It was really, really rough at the airports. I was, as you get older, you don't want to run at all. You don't look good running, but running to both gates to get the plane initially and to get the plane to take off, which we only made because of a delay in the flight. was a lot. I mean, it really was a really long security line. And even with like all the fancy TSA pre stuff that I do to get through that airport line, bizarre. It was really, really crazy. Now, of course, Trump was there. So that's going to be part of it, right? Whenever Trump is in the building, you're going to get a heck of a lot of security, rightfully so, because you had a terrorist attack a few weeks ago. Thank you, Islamic extremists, for yet another donation to the terrorism pie. But also, of course, Trump is a guy who was almost killed by a bunch of Democratic donors multiple times over the past year. So it's nice to make sure that he is in a secure environment. Really, really important. Trump attends Super Bowl, relishes attention of the first 3 weeks. I think, well, both of those are true. He did attend, and he is relishing the attention. And the reason he's relishing the attention is because people are receiving what he's doing pretty darn well right now. Now, we don't know how long that's going to last. There's usually a time limit for these things. We shouldn't be surprised when that time limit comes. We shouldn't panic when that time limit comes. There probably will be a time that moderates and people on the Democratic side who don't really love Trump or don't really love his policies start to stray and fade away a little bit. That's to be expected. But you know, there was an overwhelmingly positive reaction to Trump inside the stadium. And that's one of the reasons he keeps going to these things, right? He is legitimately getting adulation that he didn't really get too much in his first term, especially when he goes to sporting events. And they put him up on the screen, loud cheers, really positive response. After he was on the screen for maybe 5 seconds or so, you heard a little bit of an underbelly of booing, but it was really, really tiny, even in the stadium. And you know, I think, you know, Donald Trump did kind of come out and bash Taylor Swift after. I don't know. He probably should just take the win on this one. He looked really good in the stadium, and I think people really liked that he was there. And that's kind of good. It's kind of nice to, like, have a situation where, you know, the president is celebrated at something like this. Now, we all know where these things go, so let's just take the moment right now and be happy about it, but we will see. Taylor Swift was there as well. And this one was a little bit weird. The media coverage on this one felt a little bit weird to me. And let me give you a picture of what it felt like actually in the stadium as opposed to what it might have felt like on TV or on social media. She was showing up on the screen. She was sitting there. It started with like about a second of cheering and then turned into some boos. And I will be honest with you. I don't know. I didn't think, I mean, like Travis Kelce was freaking out. Travis Kelce is, of course, Taylor Swift's boyfriend. Reaction to Taylor Swift being booed at Super Bowl revealed by a source. By the way, he didn't say anything about this, but the Post is saying there was a source who said Travis was aware of her getting booed and he felt helpless. Seeing the look on her face got to him. He always protects her and it broke his heart and blah, 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 blah. Okay, look, I was in the stadium. I'm an Eagles fan. I have witnessed Eagles fans boo things before. Real booing, real visceral hatred booing. Normally directed at their own coach or something, right? Like, this is something I have seen over and over and over again. Frankly, I didn't think it was that at all. It felt to me to be basically good-natured. It was like good-natured ribbing, I will say. And, you know, I've seen their reaction before when they really hate something. It wasn't even that. It was like, you know, it was kind of funny, honestly. Her reaction was really good. She played it off really funny, kind of like looking around with a side eye of like, are you guys talking about me? Like, it was, she played it off funny and kind of smiled about it. I thought it was actually a fine moment. I mean, and I think it's part of like playing the role, right? The Eagles fans boo Santa Claus. They're going to boo Taylor Swift too. Not to mention, you know, Eagles fans remember that Taylor Swift is an Eagles fan. Like, she grew up about an hour away from Philly. She is basically a Philly girl. She was an Eagles fan. And, like, I get that now she's dating somebody on the other team. And I guess she feels she needs to start wearing red and become a big fan of the Chiefs. And whatever. Like, I don't think she cared about football all that much other than just growing up near the Eagles. But, like, I mean, she's kind of a turncoat to the Eagles. And in a good-natured way, she deserves a little boo. I mean, on that, right? I mean, like, I certainly, you know, you see this with, I don't know, what's Jason? Anyone know Jason Kelce's wife's name? I can't think of it off the top of my head. But she does her own podcast. She's very visible on the Kelce's podcast, and she's like, if Jason ever leaves the Eagles, I'm still wearing Eagles colors. Like, that's what a Philly fan does. Like, I don't care if you're married to a star on the other team. You maintain your Eagles fandom. And, like, the fact that she didn't do that, yeah, she deserves it a little bit. But she played it off fine. It was, like, it was not a big deal. If Travis Kelce actually feels the way I felt helpless, oh, relax. It wasn't that big of a deal. I don't think it was, I don't know. That's not what I saw. Now, I also, everyone, whenever we come back from the Super Bowl, one of the most common questions I get asked is, what was it like in the stadium for the halftime show? And the truth is, I tell, it's the same answer every single year. Usually it sucks. I mean, and that even, it's not even a commentary on what the act was this year, which we can get into. But it's just not made for me. It's not made for anybody in the stadium. It is a TV event. You are in the stadium. They are dancing on. You can barely see anything. You're really, really far away. The you know, the lighting, you know, there's little people dancing around on stage. You can't really tell what's going on. You know, the music, I'm not a fan. Of this particular one, but like it's not a great. It's not like if you were to see a concert in that venue where everything was designed, the sound was designed to hit you perfectly. It's really more just designed for the TV speakers, and I heard that wasn't even that strong this year, so it's not great. As is the tradition, I am always on the opposite side of, for whatever reason, of the TV cameras, so they don't even face me. What I wind up seeing is a bunch of people and their backs. The craziest one was a couple of years ago in Los Angeles when it was like all the 90s rappers, like I think it was like Dre and Jay-Z, I don't know, a bunch of the, those guys were there. Eminem, I think, was there. And they actually had a big set, and all we saw was the back of the set. That's what it's like in the stadium. They have a big Jumbotron, and we all watch it on TV just like you. So that's what it's like when you're in the stadium. And I will say, another strange thing about this one was Kendrick Lamar. Like, I know Kendrick Lamar is very popular. I know he's got you know, billions of streams or whatever, but like certainly not targeted toward the audience of the people who were there, which were like largely like a bunch of, you know, 50-year-old white executives. They're not huge Kendrick Lamar fans. I mean, that's just not really a target demo. Again, this is going out to hundreds of millions of people across the globe and looking for that popularity, not for the people in the stadium. So it's just really not good. Now, apparently there's some thing going on with Kendrick Lamar and Drake. He used his Super Bowl halftime show to settle a vendetta. I don't really care about the vendetta. Apparently Serena Williams was there. She's part of the vendetta. Why? I don't know if she dated Drake or something at some point. I don't know. I don't really care. Maybe you care. If you do, lots of shows will give you details on that. I didn't even see it happen. I didn't see Serena Williams go out there. Most of the time I was out getting soda and going to the bathroom. So that's basically what happened at that point. There was also a protester. I will say even a protester who was, by the way, on the crew, on the stage crew of the Super Bowl, which is kind of crazy. He's been banned for life now after waving flags and protests instead of actually doing his job he was hired for, which is pretty crazy. At the end of the day, I did not even see this happen. So no one saw it, I think, on TV. He did run out there with this stupid sign. And, you know, it's really, to set aside the Super Bowl aspect of it for a second, really important to make sure that you protest behalf of a group of people who praised October 7th. So, you know, you might want to make sure you get on the right side of history by siding with the people who raped a bunch of women and beheaded a bunch of people in Gaza. That was, and took them hostage and killed babies and such. That's a wonderful side of the argument to be on, and you can understand why it would be so important for you to stand up and show your support for Hamas. So that's wonderful. I will say Kendrick Lamar, just as an act, it's like, it's not to me in the sweet spot of Super Bowl acts. Like, to me, the perfect one was 2002 U2. And you might say, okay, Stu, you're some white guy, and of course you like U2, so you think U2's the perfect. No, I really feel like that's the sweet spot, because U2 was still a big band at the time, still putting out relevant stuff. Like, they weren't, you know, far removed from any hits. They were still in the middle of their peak, maybe toward the end of their peak, on the backside of it at least. But they were still putting out, you know, hit songs and were still culturally relevant, but then also had a big catalog. A lot of people liked them. Multiple generations liked them. So they were, that was absolutely perfect. Like, you know, Kendrick Lamar, like, you're playing toward a younger audience. I get that. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's been a lot of cultural crossover. Part of that is we were just so in our own bubbles when it comes to music and stuff that, you know, that's what happens. But it also happened with, like, the other side of this was they had The Who. I think it was Miami one year. They had The Who as the act. And it's like, The Who was a big band, obviously, at one time, but they were 20 years past that point of hype. Time relevance, and it just felt like, okay, they're gonna put up a guy playing all of his old hits from a million years ago. that wasn't great either. You got to find that sweet spot, and it's not easy to find. I mean, honestly, as much as I you know, I'm not a Swiftie, but Taylor Swift would be that person right now, and she's not going to do it because I think she would bankrupt the NFL for the amount that she would charge. So that was the U2 thing. Okay, other thing was New Orleans itself. New Orleans doesn't really change much. It's weird because these cities usually grow and new hotels are built. There was a real shortage of hotels down there. It feels the same as it felt when I was there in 2010. And I think that's the last time I was in New Orleans. And of course, you know, it was destroyed by Katrina, as we all remember. One of the things I was able to do was go on yesterday. I wanted to drive by Six Flags New Orleans. I don't know if you remember this story. It was called Jazzland at one point. Then it transferred into Six Flags New Orleans. It had opened up and then got hit with Katrina. It said, you know, sign on its thing, closed for storm. And then this happened. This footage, if you don't remember this from 2005, the entire thing flooded and it was really bad. And they were like, okay, well, we're closed for the storm. We'll reopen soon. And then they were like, yeah, maybe it's going to take a little longer. And then it was like, I don't know if we can actually do this. We'll have to redevelop it. And then it ended in a period where they just said, okay, this isn't going to happen. We're going to abandon this thing. So this is in 2009. You kind of see it's kind of in a little bit of disrepair and it's, you know, they had given up at this point. It had gone into ruins. And I love this stuff. I love the abandoned photography. I don't know what it is. Like these like modern things that come and decay over time. I'm like fascinated by. So and this is what when we drove by it today, that same roller coaster looks like. We drove by it yesterday, excuse me. And you can see now that same roller coaster, you can follow the track up and around and it just stops. Like, it, you know, a big chunk of it has just collapsed now. And every year, of course, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. So that's where I go. And by the way, we went by this and then went by the next exit. And it's like you get the sense of like Six Flags. New Orleans is kind of a famous abandoned place, but you don't get the sense of how much and how much of this area has been destroyed. The next exit we got off, I don't know if we have this footage. I think we do. So this is Zach's, my son's footage. We're off of an exit here. It is just a desolate wasteland. And you can see there's just everywhere tires and right off the side of the road, tires everywhere, just piles of tires, piles of used office equipment, sofas just turned upside down. They're everywhere. It looked honestly as if no one had gotten off this exit since like 2005. This is a normal exit off of a freeway. It looks like you're driving through a junkyard. And so much of that particular area was like this, where in New Orleans, there was obviously a real effort to be made to rehabilitate the area and get people back into the city. And to the fact that they held the Super Bowl only a few years later, there are areas of New Orleans that they're not even trying. I mean, they're just gone. And that was really shocking to see. And it was weird for my son to see it. He had never seen anything like that. It was great to go with my son, though. This is the third Super Bowl we've been to together. The second one the Eagles won. I've never seen him more depressed than a couple of years ago when we walked out of that Super Bowl after a very close Eagles loss. That was not the case this year. A thrilling time. We got to do so many really cool things. And we even got to recreate our favorite photo from 2017 Super Bowl, 2018, and where we got to turn it with the confetti in the background, yelling in celebration. And it was great to be there again with my son, which, of course, is the best part about it. It wasn't the best birthday of my life. I mean, it was my birthday and the Eagles victory. I'm there with my son. It was a great, great birthday. Although I have to admit also my second favorite birthday. Never going to be my favorite. First favorite. My daughter was actually born on the same day I was born. So I got to say my favorite birthday of all time has got to be 2013 with my daughter being born. But my second favorite birthday, Eagles Super Bowl with my son. In New Orleans, really, really fun time. And man, I honestly can't believe it. I mean, I think one of my oldest tweets was I posted in 2017 before the season, just once before I die. Just give me one Super Bowl before I die. Now I got two. And honestly, I'll take a third. Give me three, four, five. You want to go, I'm going to get nine. I'm fine. I'm going to get as many as you want. They're all equally really, really fun and enjoyable. And I will say a lot of people are like, oh, well, I don't know. I can't root for the Eagles. The Eagles, by the way, you know, a liberal owner, They got green all over, like, and I don't mean green like the color, but like, you know, solar panels all over the place at their stadium that do nothing, by the way. Even on the official tour, they tell you it's only enough to power like a few hair dryers. It's hilarious. They've got solar panels all over the roof of the building, and they do absolutely nothing but symbolism. They were named after a government program. I should not like this team for any political purposes, but that's what's great about sports. It's not about politics. But if you need that, if you need the political side of it, and you're saying, wait a minute, the Chiefs are the MAGA team, right? Think about this for a second. Donald Trump, elected president in 2016, serves his first term. And then he takes a term off. Let's call it, and then is back for his victorious reunion, his victorious second term with one in between. And when you think about the Eagles, 2023, they're in the Super Bowl. They lose, and then they take a Super Bowl off, and then they come back. The same sort of triumphant MAGA return to the Super Bowl. I'm trying to win you over any way possible. This triumphant MAGA return to the Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles, America's team. Yes, we can all unite around. Well, we can unite at least around the Chiefs losing, because I think even Cowboys fans in my life were like, God, thank God you guys took out the Chiefs. Okay, 40-22, greatest, one of the two greatest games of all time. I think we can both all agree on that, even though it was a complete blowout. I loved it. And thank you so much for all the people who have messaged me on social media and remember and realize it's absurdly such a large part of my life, my Eagles fandom. I text messaged a friend of mine who's also a huge Eagles fan. And I love this team so much. And she just texted back, I do too. And it's too much. Like it is, it's completely insane. But it is life as a sports fan. And thank you so much for all your messages and well wishes on social media, even if you didn't mean it. All right, let's talk to Carol Roth. She's back here with some actual news in just a second. We hear a lot about the supply chain. It's unpredictable and it can be very fragile at times. When your package is delayed for weeks and weeks and weeks, it's, you know, that can be annoying. But when your essential medications are delayed, it can be an emergency. And as we're entering into yet another period of potential uncertainty, right now is a great time to prepare. And Jace is here to help you do that. They provide emergency medical kits that are customized to your specific needs. Whether you're traveling, buying it for the kids, or just need a peace of mind in case of an emergency, Jace has got you covered. And right now, they're holding giveaways all month long to make sure that you have the right medications on hand the moment that you need them. You could win anything from a travel case to, which is called a Jace Go, or a fully custom Jace case. Now is the time to protect your family from uncertainty. Your health is way too important to take and make a risk of it. So, I mean, look, we were just talking, showing that Katrina footage. Like, what happens if you're in that situation, right? Like, you need to get access to medications. And a lot of people think of food. A lot of people think of water. Very much needed. But also, your medications are crucial. Go to Jace.com, enter the giveaway, or purchase your own case. Go to Jace.com, enter the code STU at checkout. Get a discount on your order now. The promo code is STU at Jace.com, Jace.com. The code is STU.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
I'm joined once again by Carol Roth, recovering investment banker and author of You Will Own Nothing, Your War with a New Financial World Order and How to Fight Back. That is a great book, and make sure to pick up a copy of that. She also has a new piece out on the Blaze. That's today. It's Dems loved IRS audits for you and now fear accountability for themselves. What a shocker. You can find a link on my X account. Carol, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Always good to see you, Stu. How have you been?
Pretty well. I should probably lead with the most important question of the day. How do you feel about America's team, the Philadelphia Eagles, and their glorious Super Bowl championship?
Well, you know, I went to school in Philadelphia, and so I got a chance to note that the Philly fan base was the absolute worst fan base in all of football.
Yes.
Yourself excluded. Oh, so God. Happy for you. And, you know, I guess at least my philosophy is at least the Chiefs didn't win again. So
yes.
I will leave it at that for you.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I felt an odd alliance with a lot of people who normally hate the Eagles, especially around these parts, who were just sick of the Chiefs. So I do appreciate that, Carol. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Let me start with this because your piece is great. And I somehow, as a person who worked with Glenn Beck for many, many years, I somehow survived the entire Obama administration and the Biden administration without getting audited. And yet, what did I get in the mail a week ago? But a letter from the IRS promising to audit me. So Doge cannot come fast enough for this guy. Let me tell you about that.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And that, you know, is a direct result of the fact that the Democrats campaigned on adding tens of thousands of new agents to the IRS. And they promised you that it was only going to be for the billionaires. So congratulations on your billionaire status. I didn't realize that, but that's exciting because obviously they were only going to increase audits for billionaires and make sure that, you know, middle and working class Americans were excluded. So, you know, obviously, we knew that that was not going to be the case, that they were coming after Main Street America. And I find it hilarious that everybody who, you know, is looking for you to, you know, report your $600 Venmo payments and eBay payments, you know, because of billionaires, now all of a sudden is having a conniption fit that we want some transparency to where our money is going. It's not even their money. It is our money. And it's another one of those, you know, rules for me, but not for thee. All animals are created equal kind of scenarios.
Yeah. Well, I can't help but think that my letter was a little bit of a parting shot from the Biden administration. We'll see how that one plays out. It should be fun. But you bring up a great point. You bring this up in the article as well. You know, they're going after your Venmo payments and you're going after your eBay payments. You know, my son has become a card collector, a sports card collector, and he has a little eBay store that he buys some cards. He sells some cards online. It's cool. He's learning about business and what it means to have cost of a business and how to make a profit and all of that. And it's been a great little lesson for him. But like, you know, some of the cards can be expensive. And sometimes they can, you know, with a bunch of sales can easily be over a $600 amount. And like now they're going to go after my kids' eBay sales. Elizabeth Warren I just can't even believe where they stand on all of this.
Yeah, the worst thing is that over time, they've had a little bit of a delay. And so the number's coming down year after year. But it's not even going to be just a $600 card. It's going to be $600 cumulatively in transactions. And so even if your son has lost money, let's say, he bought a bunch of cards and he ended up having to sell them at a loss, because he has shown $600 in transactions, now your son is going to have to keep track of all of his receipts. And if he doesn't report that appropriately, or they decide something is wonky, they're going to go after him and he's going to have to hire an accountant and a lawyer to defend and ensure the fact that, yes, I did this accounting properly. And they know that middle and working class Americans and young kids obviously cannot afford to do this. And so people are going to end up paying those penalties instead. So this really stands at odds with everything that the Trump administration is trying to do, with DOGE is trying to do. And so one of the things that I've suggested is that I would like to see that limit for reporting be raised back up to where it was before, which was $20,000 or even higher. Because if you're doing these things as hobbyists, you know, you really don't need to be taxed on that. Our tax situation isn't going to shift materially. So why not give people a break and let them not have to worry about keeping transactions? You know, people are doing eBay as a legitimate business and they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Absolutely. That's fine. But for, you know, kids and hobbyists and, you know, people who are selling their wares on any sort of, you know, social account, Poshmark or whatnot, just to make a few extra bucks or to get back some of the money that they put out, they shouldn't have to go through this hassle. And it just goes to show how completely hypocritical Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, all of these Dems are, that they want to sneak in and take a look and put you under the microscope. But when they forcibly take $5 trillion from us per year, and we demand to know how that's being spent, all of a sudden, they want to be up in arms over it.
It really is amazing how that works, isn't it, Carol? You know, oversight for thee, but not for me, is the way I guess it works. And, you know, when I think of, like, the things that are going on in the Trump administration. There's been a lot of good things so far. I haven't agreed with every single thing, but there's been a lot of good things so far. But the Doge part of this is what gets me, I think, most pumped up, because we have been talking about this as conservatives forever. Like, I think there's been a long-standing conservative consensus that government needs to be smaller, it needs to be more efficient, it needs to do less things, it needs to do those things better. And there's always been a lot of talk about it. There's been a lot of white papers I've read over the years on how to do it, and that's all great. And it does feel like Elon Musk is saying, you know what? No, we're just going to go for it. We're not going to stop. We're not going to give you a report in 18 months. We're going to cut the corners and make sure we get this done as fast as possible so it actually happens this time. I don't know if they can get there. There's a lot of legal problems, I guess, they're going to face. But, man, it's at least they're trying.
It is so refreshing, and it just goes to show you the difference in mentality between the private sector and the government sector. You have Trump, you have Elon, you have people who run businesses who know how to get to these things, and there isn't red tape, and they just say, no, we're not going to produce a report, we're going to identify this, and we're going to destroy this, because we don't have the luxury of messing around. Like you said, there have been audits, there have been reports, but nobody actually does anything. So to see things immediately on the chopping block is about the most exciting thing I've ever seen in politics in my lifetime. And I hope there is an effort, A, from Congress, which I'm not holding my breath, to codify some of these actions so it actually, you know, makes them more permanent and kind of takes away the ability to have legal challenges. But also that some of these legal challenges, you know, if they are put forth, don't stand up. Because the reality is that everybody, this is not a bipartisan issue, everybody should want to eliminate fraud, waste, and abuse in government spending. And the reality is we can really shore up our fiscal situation if there is as much of it as it looks like it's happening. Because, you know, we've talked about before these bigger issues with Social Security and Medicaid, these untouchable programs. But what we really never dug into is what percentage of that is also fraud, waste, and abuse. And so if you have these big buckets of cash and you're able to cull back enough of those, maybe we can get closer to a balanced budget and make the whole process easier here. So it is a very optimistic day in America, but again, cautiously optimistic because there are a lot of people who are clearly benefiting from this fraud, waste, and abuse, and they're doing everything they can to thwart that effort. But the more that we use our voices and the more that we say this is something we want, and if you stand in the way of this, you will be primaried, we will throw you out of power, I think the more that we can win as American people. And that's one thing that Elon Musk notably has enabled.
Do you have any sense, Carol, like, on the legal side of this, how much of this is going to hold? I mean, it feels like a lot of these efforts are really, I like that they're smart, I like that they're aggressive. Every union is stepping in and saying, well, you can't legally ask my employees whether they want to take a voluntary payout or a buyout of their jobs. Like, I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, is this stuff going to hold up in court, do you think?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, Stu, and I don't play one on TV either, but that doesn't stop me from giving my opinion. I would hope that to the extent that this makes it through the court system and perhaps some of this gets challenged, you know, it gets all the way up to the Supreme Court level, that you have these reasonable people who actually do abide by the law and say, yeah, this is not something that is in the law that you can prevent. Because it is ridiculous when, you know, there are two people trying to make a contract for some third party to come in and say, no, you absolutely can't do that. So I am hopeful that that's something that we could see. But again, Congress could just step up and codify it themselves. But yes, we know the problems with Congress. So,
yes.
You know, we have to do our best. But I would imagine that things that are under the executive branch's purview, which is, I imagine, why they've sort of started in a lot of, you know, those pockets, should be under the executive branch's purview. If they can unconstitutionally put all of these bureaucrats in place to spend money, it seems like they should have the option to remove them. That's just me, but I'm a common sense gal, not a government gal, and not a lawyer either.
But you kind of play one on TV, but not completely. last one for you here, Carol. And I should start this by saying I don't believe this is the case, and I also wouldn't really care if it was. But We are at a point in our country that the government has expanded to massively large levels, to the point where the government is a really big percentage of our economy.
Yes.
And if you cut drastically on the economy or the government side, there is an argument that this will have really negative effects for the economy in general. Are you worried at all about that?
I'm very worried about this. I've been warning about this for a while, which is why I keep talking about choreography and the order of operations, why it's so important, because there is a math reality, both in terms of our fiscal situation, you things like debt to GDP, deficits to GDP, where we stand in terms of foreign holders of our assets, you know, where the dollar strength is globally, all of these kind of wonky things, and then just the math of what goes into GDP. And the reality is that we know the Biden administration has been spending using wartime level deficits to prop up the GDP and basically create the appearance of a good economy. So they have kept us out of a recession by going into, you know, massive debt using these wartime level deficits. And so what's going to happen is, to the extent that, you know, some of this, you know, fraud and waste and abuse is probably not being captured in the GDP. And so it's really, you know, that part is great because, you know, that's just, you know, extra dollars that are being cut out. But to the extent that some of these payments are finding their way back into the GDP calculation, that means that we need to accelerate growth of GDP enough in order to make up for whatever was being, you know, is being cut by DOGE. And that's why I think it's very important. Something like a buyout structure is very smart because, you know, it gives you 8 months to transition that person, hopefully to a private sector job, and then make that seamless versus taking that person out of the workforce and, you know, entirely. So I do think they're being somewhat thoughtful about that, but I do worry a little bit. We'd all like to see that, you know, complete hatchet job and just going in and blowing up the whole thing. But if they do it too quickly, then we end up with blowing up the economy, having a recession. And my biggest concern is that people aren't going to understand this. Then they're going to say, see, Trump's policies don't work. Mm-hmm. They're creating negative growth. And then they're going to step in and take that power away. And we're not going to be able to see this through to its logical conclusion. So it does need to be done very methodically. And people have to be patient and understand what could possibly happen on the other side. So we'll see if everybody has the stomach for it.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I because I want this stuff, I have the temptation to say, screw it. If the chaos happens, it happens. But like, that's not going to be helpful. I think it's the same concern with the tariffs. You know, if the tariffs are get in place and it bangs the economy hard enough, he might not have the long term to get these policies in and enough rope with the American people to get across that finish line. And I think that would be really, really negative. Carol Roth, be sure to check out the new piece for The Blaze. It is Dems loved IRS audits for you and now for your accountability for themselves. By the way, if you're the one auditing me, please stop. You can find that over at my X account. We'll send out a link to that. Carol, thanks so much. If you have any connections with whoever's auditing me, please give them that message.
I'll put a shout out.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
It's a question we've been asking ourselves quite a bit since November, and it's one that we will slowly get the answers to. It's a question about whether Democrats are going to take some lesson from what just happened, or if they're going to just double down on the same old crap and see, you know, hopefully Trump does something bad enough to anger the American people and they just win by default. Those are two questions. And they're making their choice every single day. Congressional Democrats, increasing number of Democrats want their party to oppose Trump. Now, of course, obviously he's the other party. You'd think, okay, you can understand the opposition, but this is really key, especially with Donald Trump. If you happen to be a Democrat, this is the wrong way to oppose him. And I was very concerned that they might learn this So far, they're just as dumb as they've always been. A congressional Democrat's approach to Trump should be, this is among Democratic voters, by the way, should it be opposing Trump as much as possible or trying to find common ground with Trump? Opposing Trump as much as possible was 46% in January. Just a few weeks later, 65%. So 46 to 65% in just a few weeks. Trying to find common ground with Trump has dropped from 54 to 35%. If you want to get something out of Donald Trump, you don't just try to oppose him as much as possible. If you want to do, trying to call him Hitler over and over and over again. You saw how well that worked. It doesn't work at all. You don't get anything out of that because the American people don't believe it. And then secondarily, you don't get anything out of Trump. Now, RFK Jr. has done the opposite. RFK Jr. has taken the opposite approach, and look what he's getting out of Trump. He's getting a $1 trillion budget to play with. He's running HHS, or soon will be. I don't want more Democrats to learn that lesson. The more they learn it, the worse it is. And so hopefully they continue to go down this road and be morons, because that's the way to go. By the way, a couple other nuggets from that poll. Confidence that congressional Democrats can oppose Trump effectively. It's gone up a little bit from 15 to 16%. But not having any confidence really at all is where it's increased. 40 to 48% just from January. And congressional this is an interesting one as well. I mean, look, we got to have some self-respect here, guys. A congressional Republican's approach to Trump. Should it be, this is among Republican voters, should it be supporting when you agree with Trump or pushing back when you disagree? Or should it be supporting whatever Trump wants? 40% of Republican voters said support whatever Donald Trump wants. Now, in effect, in actuality, they're pretty much supporting whatever Donald Trump wants anyway. That's kind of what normally happens with Republican presidents. But you shouldn't be admitting that. You should not be internally saying to yourself, I'm going to support whatever he wants. What kind of blank check is that to write to anybody? I don't care who it is. You got to have a mind for yourself. Even if you're lying to yourself, you have to at least believe you would oppose him if you disagreed with him on something. It is important to do so. Any person needs that check. If you've ever lived as a human being, you know nobody is infallible, and that's important. Speaking of not infallible, they were making praise candles to this man not too long ago, but Doge has scrapped a Fauci museum exhibit as part of $182 million in cuts. This is real. In the past 48 hours, HHS canceled 62 contracts worth $182 million. These contracts were entirely for administrative expenses. None touched any healthcare programs. Really important to note that. This included terminating a $168,000 contract for an Anthony Fauci exhibit at the NIH Museum. You think we need an NIH museum at all? Let alone an Anthony Fauci exhibit in it? Please. Finally, Airbus is exploring a double-level airplane seat design. I want to show you this to you. Do we have the picture of it? Because this is interesting. So you'd have some seats that are a little higher, some seats that are a little lower. The lower seats sort of curve under the higher seats' backs. It will, I guess, allow them to fit a couple more rows in each plane and will obviously let them make more money. It also, if you are in one of the lower seats, will have your face basically right behind the person farting in front of you. And that is the real concern here. I think there could be some sort of a class war that comes on between the people sitting in the lowers and the people sitting in the others. Uppers, I'm a little confused, and I don't think I want this to happen, but they're trying to just, go after you for as much as possible. So certain seats will be okay, and then others will smell really, really bad is my belief on this one. We'll see if it actually comes to fruition, or maybe Doge can just cancel that as well. Any time in life that you have to make a big change, it's hard. And this is especially true when you're trying to buy or sell a home. It's really complicated. You don't really know what's going on. None of the paperwork makes any sense to anybody. It takes a lot of jumping through hoops. And of course, the stakes are just about as high as they ever get in terms of financial decisions that you make. So obviously, you need a real estate agent to help you with all of this. What you don't want is just some ordinary agent who does this on the side. You want the best. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com pairs you with the best, the top-selling real estate agents in your area. This is someone who knows the best practices, someone who understands the crazy housing market, someone who's a team leader and a closer, someone you can trust. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home or both, please get in touch. You'll see what I mean. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. The name kind of says it all, realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you, realestateagentsitrust.com. Anthony.com. I mean, $167,000 for an Anthony Fauci museum exhibit. I mean, you couldn't do that for, I mean, $8. You know, he sucked. That's kind of it. It's fascinating how this happens. By the way, what would even be in an Anthony Fauci museum exhibit? I don't know. Let me show you one thing that would not be in it. This is going to be the latest episode of Matt Kibbe's documentary series, The Cover-Up. It is here. You can watch episode 4 of The Cover-Up. It's called Smoking Gun on Blaze TV. It's releasing this Thursday. Become a subscriber at FauciCoverUp.com/Stu. FauciCoverUp.com/Stu. Use the code SMOKINGGUN. You'll get $30 off your subscription. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say museum exhibits showing... Even if you like the guy, like, wouldn't it be incredibly boring?
He liked masks. Well, he didn't like masks initially. Then he liked masks, did a bunch of research that wound up, you know, potentially killing a bunch of people. It's great.
FauciCoverUp.com/Stu. Code is SmokingGun. Get $30 off your subscription right now.